The Blast from Our Past Network.
Lock your doors, close your windows, turn out your lights, for chills and thrills await you. It's time for Podcasting After Dark with your hosts, Corey Stevenson and Zach Schaefer. Stay with a friend, say your prayers as grisly ghouls close in to seal your doom, and enjoy this bonus episode of Podcasting After Dark.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a bonus episode of Podcasting After Dark. Normally, I do these solo, but I brought my buddy Diallo in so we could talk about Hellboy the Crooked Man. Diallo, how's it going, brother?
I'm okay. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. And I was going to, you know, just do a solo review for this like I've been doing for like the past couple of these reviews. But you and I got to talking about this movie and you were like, I'd never heard of this. Are you talking about the Neil Marshall movie? And I was like, no, there's a newer Hellboy film out there. And you were like, how the hell did that get past me? So yeah. I was like, this is perfect because, you know, it was new to me when I watched it a couple weeks ago and it's new to you now. Diallo, before we kind of get into the Crooked Man in general, and before we get into like our Crooked Man discussion and review, what's your like thoughts on Hellboy in general? Did you read the comics back in the day? Did you watch the Guillermo del Toro movies? Did you watch the Neil Marshall movie? You know, let's get into all that first.
So let's set the Wayback Machine to 1993, I think. Was it 92 or 93? So
like
I was,
that, yeah.
I was big into Image. A lot of my favorite creators jumped over there. I have the first appearance of Hellboy, which I believe is in John Byrne's Next Men.
Okay.
I, you know, kind of go back and I got the first, you know, I think the first few, I can't even remember because I haven't really read them since, but the first like miniseries or whatever of Hellboy.
Yeah.
I feel like I got, you know, some stuff down the line, but I didn't really stick with it. I really don't like the first Del Toro movie. But I really, really love the second movie. I love it. And I only got through the first maybe 20 minutes of the third movie. I think it was the lead guy. He just didn't really, he didn't seem like Hellboy. It's like Ron Perlman's face. Like he doesn't even need makeup. His face doesn't need it, you know? He was the Beast, right? So, there's something about it that just didn't hit for me. In general, I like, you know, I love Hellboy. I have a coaster somewhere of a Hellboy that's signed by Mike Mignola.
Oh, cool.
It's like, yeah, he's a mainstay in my life. It's actually kind of amazing that this is like the fourth Hellboy movie. Like out of all of the Image stuff, it's kind of weird that like he's had such like, cross media success, that's mostly my experience with Hellboy.
Mine is very, very similar to you. I was reading comics at the time when Hellboy came out and, you know, reading Image. I remember all that. I picked up some issues here and there. I was actually a big fan of Mike Mignola's artwork before Hellboy even came out. So like it was already on my radar. But you know, life and such, I never really read them regularly. It wasn't until I was working at Diamond Comic Distributors, and the first Hellboy movie came out, I saw it and I was like, I enjoyed some of it. I enjoyed the look of it. I enjoyed the bad guys in it. But it also kind of, it made me want to go back and reread the comics. And at that point, of course, and actually, I think it was, by the way, it was not Image. I believe it was Dark Horse.
Yeah, Dark Horse. Out. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
And so, of course, Dark Horse went and put all of them back out on in trade paperback and everything because the movie was out and everything. So I caught up on stuff. I very much enjoy the Golden Army more than the first one. Although, again, like I said, I really liked the villains of the first one, like the Cronin and stuff like that. I thought they were really cool. The Neil Marshall flick, fucking hated it. And I love Neil Marshall. I love Dark Soul, Dog Soldiers. You know, I love The Descent and everything. And I was jazzed for that movie because I wanted to see Neil Marshall make a comeback. And that was not the vehicle for him, unfortunately. And then, you know, this movie comes out and I have no fucking interest in seeing it at this point. Like, I feel like the brand is tarnished, you know? And so we'll get into our thoughts on this movie and whether that's true or not. But I will say one of the things that I disliked the most about the Guillermo del Toro movies is that in those movies, Hellboy and the BPRD are like, they're relegated to the shadows. And one of the things, which is a complete antithesis of the comic books, one of the things I actually really always liked about the Mike Mignola comic books is everyone knows who Hellboy is and no one gives a shit. Like, he'll go to like a small town in Bulgaria and like, oh, hi, Mr. Hellboy. We read about you in the newspaper. How's it going? Here's the problem that we're having. And it kind of added to this whole blue collar shtick that Hellboy had, which is he's just doing his job. He's like, I'm nobody special. My job is to take out the trash, and that trash happens to be demons, you know? And I always liked that. And I was so confused in the Guillermo del Toro movies as to why this whole subplot of them having to like be in the shadows was a thing. And I'll tell you, one of my favorite parts of The Crooked Man was the fact that it was more aligned with the comic in that respect. Mm-hmm. But Diallo, real quick, I do want to say, you know, we were talking the other night offline, and I'm rereading the early Punisher stuff from the 80s, the original Punisher run. And I remember Punisher, like number 6 or 7, has a cover by Mike Mignola of Punisher standing in the, like, with a gas mask on and this, like, in this toxic waste environment.
Yeah.
And it's like, it does not look like Mike Mignola's art at all, but you can see some of the negative space starting to come through, but it doesn't have all the blockiness to it and everything. And I'm just like, and you just, you're kind of reminded that some artist's styles evolved over time.
Yeah, dude. If you ever look at some of Jim Lee's earlier stuff, like, you wouldn't recognize who he became. Todd McFarlane, also, I remember him doing Infinity Inc., I think it was called. You wouldn't even know. But and then Mark Silvestri.
What about Rob Liefeld? What about Rob Liefeld with the original Hawk and Dove miniseries?
Yeah.
He actually had anatomy correct and everything. Yeah. You and I have actually talked about that before. You think that his inker probably saved him on that.
Yeah, it's, you know, I have this thing about, I mean, especially with filmmakers, but I think, like, in, I think it goes across the board with artists, even football coaches. It's sort of like, I think sometimes you're better when you have people telling you no or supporting you where your weaknesses are. And if you get more juice and, you know, it's like they want to hand you the keys, maybe you weren't as good as calling defenses, like if you're a coach. So that part's going to just kind of suffer, right? So you don't look as good. Or like in the case of Liefeld, like, I remember it was actually the story for me. So more with him when he first popped in on the end of New Mutants, like it was like Louis Simonson was writing. And so it was like good. And then but then he took over everything and then it just became, to me, it just became like a, you know, a shit show. So
With Strife and all that kind of shit and everything. I was reading New Mutants at the time when Liefeld dropped there, you know.
Yeah. And then, you know, like I've said this, like, I think a million times before, it's like, but directors, I mean, you know, you have Zack Snyder, Michael Bay, even J.J. Abrams. It's like when you look at some of their earlier work, it's a lot tighter, it's a lot better, a lot stronger. But then as their profile rises and they just start getting money thrown at them, it starts to kind of like spiral. You look at Michael Bay. It's like, I love Bad Boys. I love The Rock. I love Armageddon, but Armageddon is the first movie where you start to see like the wheels starting to come off and everything worked. And then you get to Pearl Harbor and that's just like no one was there to tell him no. So he just like it was just all over the place. He had some failures after that, and I think he got pulled in the reins. And so when he did Transformers, he had like Steven Spielberg propping him up. And
yeah.
And then I think that movie's actually pretty good. And then it did really well. And then he was on his own again.
And it gets worse and they get worse and worse and worse.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, like, you know, I don't know. We're just total side note. But yeah, it's
well,
like.
Well, the flip side of that coin is, I think once Mike Mignola locked into his style and also like his sort of his writing style with Hellboy and everything like that, I think, you know, the reverse happened. I think once people let Mike Mignola just do his own thing, that's when he really excelled as a comic book illustrator and creator in general.
Yeah, well, there are like, there are people that can do that. John Byrne is one.
Yeah.
Mike Mignola's one. Who am I thinking of? I'm thinking of somebody else, but yeah, it's like, when you actually, Eric Larson is another one.
Yeah. With Savage Dragon. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like when, there are people out there that can, but then there are others, just, you know, and like, Jim Lee to me is like one of the greatest sort of like objectively good artists, I think.
Right.
But it's like, I've never really liked his writing or creative style, like his creativity. Right. So it's like when he struck out on his own, it just, I don't know, never really popped after.
Yeah,
you know.
Like look at Wildcats. I mean, I didn't love Wildcats until they went with, I think it was like Wildcats 2.0.
Yeah.
And that was, and it was a completely other creative team overtook it, and it turned out fantastic.
Right.
But I never liked Wildcats when it was just Jim Lee's thing. I think some artists are just better artists, and they don't have to be the all-encompassing creator. Now, back to Mike Mignola and trying to stay on topic.
Yeah.
I think he is one of those creators that are just, he's almost like a film auteur. Mm-hmm. Like everything that when he controls everything, it comes for the better. Now, how much control he had over this, I don't quite know. But, you know, getting into a little bit of the cast and crew of The Crooked Man, I do want to call out the writer and director who I actually fucking love, Brian Taylor. And honestly, I almost love every single thing he's ever done, and which is starting with Crank. He directed Crank, Crank 2.
Love it.
Yep, those are such fun movies. He also did Gamer, which I've actually never seen, but I heard it was decent. It was like one of those movies that people say it's better than you know you're expecting it to be. Mm-hmm. Ghost Rider: Spirit of Vengeance, I actually quite enjoyed.
I can't even remember. I think I might have deleted it out of my. Is that the one with the? Wait, they were both with Nick Cage, right?
It was both with Nick Cage, but this one was one a bit darker, more kinetic.
Was Evan Mendez in the second one or no?
That's the only thing I remember. It was Idris Elba was in the second one.
Oh, okay,
it was fun. But the one movie that I would actually call out of his that's fantastic is a movie called Mom and Dad with Nicolas Cage and Selma Blair. And basically, it's like a zombie movie where in this world, all of a sudden, this like something happens and something switches in everyone's parents' brain, and every parent is trying to kill their kids. Now, not every parent is trying to kill someone else's kid. They're only trying to kill their own kid. And it is very fun. It's very interesting. And it's really fucking good. And it's a movie that no one really fucking talks about.
Nice.
I would recommend checking it out. It's a horror movie. It's like a zombie movie, but it's a very different spin on it. He also created that show with Christopher Maloney called Happy, which is based on a comic book. And then he did this. And so, I can honestly say that I enjoy, 80% of what he created. Have you seen any of those other movies? I know you saw Crank. And you haven't seen Spirit of Vengeance.
I mean, I saw Spirit of Vengeance. I just don't. I think I deleted it from my memory. But yeah, I did love Crank 1 and 2. Loved those. I really loved them.
I know.
Yeah. I think I liked Crank 2 even more somehow.
Yes, me too. Yeah. I did too.
That's like Amy Smart was in those, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. That was his girlfriend. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. I mean, I'm so in love with her. But yeah.
So was I. Trust me. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's cool. I didn't really. Yeah. We'll talk about this movie, but. I didn't really in a way it was a good experience for me because you know me, I don't like to watch trailers. Yeah. I like to come in as clean as I can because I am this purist or something about movies and TV, where especially movies, where I really want to engage with what you're putting on the screen and not have any preconceived notions to like tell me whether I'm supposed to like something or not based on like build up, you know, expectations. Right. So if the movie itself is good, then to me that it's good. And I've had experiences on either side, like, you know, I've had some people not like a movie because expectations, whereas right. I loved it because I just came in fresh. That's Star Trek Into Darkness is the one I think, like, I always think of, because everybody was like, he lied to us, it was Khan. And I'm like,
yeah,
I was like, well, like, duh. Like, I came into that completely fresh. You know, I think I didn't see any one trailer. But anyways, so for this movie, I had no, obviously, I didn't even know it existed.
You didn't even know it existed. Like, seriously, yeah. Like, Diallo and I were talking for like 5 minutes, and he thought I was talking about the Neil Marshall movie. And I was like, no, no, there's a newer Hellboy movie. And you're like, how is this possible? How can something, a Hellboy movie, exist without you knowing about it?
At first, I was like, because I almost didn't say, like, I wasn't going to say anything because I didn't want to just like start crapping on it. Think like, because like, I had nothing good to say about the third movie. And that's what I thought you were talking about. But you were like, oh, I really liked it. So I didn't want to like pop in and be like, it was terrible, you know. So I was just quiet until I realized that it's a completely like, different movie.
And then I'm like,
wait a minute,
movie.
What's and I still, as I was watching it, I just, my brain was like, when did this happen? Like, it's so it's like a dead, like, I had no, I still can't recall ever seeing anything or hearing anything. It's just, it's so weird.
I know. And real quick, the guy that plays Hell, because the cast is super small, and I actually don't really know too many people from it. The guy that plays Hellboy, Jack Casey, fucking, I don't know. He was in Death Wish, the remake. He was in Baywatch, the movie. I don't even know. The girl, Adeline Rudolph, she plays Bobby Joe Song in this. She's playing Katana in Mortal Kombat 2. I fucking hated the first movie, but I'll still hate watch the second one.
I mean, it's like, I'm going to watch them no matter what.
But bro, we got to call out Joseph Marcel.
Madam and sir.
Jeffrey fucking from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I've never seen him in anything but Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but yeah. I was so happy to see him in this, and I very much enjoyed what he was doing in this.
I mean, I felt like he was one of the best performances, or like he acted. The only other, I think the Crooked Man was the only other, like, I think, like, performance. But yeah, you definitely saw his thespian pedigree.
Acting.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's just get into the movie. We will both want to talk about it. So, the Crooked Man, fourth installment in the franchise. You know, I feel like, you know, the Hellboy movies under Guillermo del Toro, they never like broke box office records, you know, but they were big enough to get this cult following. And obviously the first one did well enough to get a second movie, but I guess the second one didn't do well enough to get a third one helmed by Guillermo del Toro. So Neil Marshall came in and did it with David Harbour, and that movie just basically almost tanked the franchise. Then this one comes along with like a nothing budget. You can tell this movie has the smallest story. It's such a tiny story. No budget. Tiny story, tiny like sort of location, and it's a very simple like point A to point B with a small roster of characters. For me, it made it feel like one, just a random BPRD story that you would just read in like, you know, back of like, you know, Dark Horse Presents or something like that. And for me, I actually really like that. And coming in a time when like all these franchises are happening, and let me just tell you, like, I have no interest in Avengers Doomsday and stuff like that. Like, I'm done with franchises and everything. And I am now more excited about movies like that Predator Prey movie that came out, you know, like a few years ago, the Native American versus the Predator. You know, I love that movie because it just felt like a little comic book one-off. And Diallo, I knew you can attest to this, but I grew up reading like all these Dark Horse comics, aliens, predators, and stuff like that. And they would have these 4-issue arcs, and then boom, like miniseries, and they would just move on to something else. If you didn't like it, you would move on to something else. But I was used to having these disparate stories coming in with, you know, no characters that were really connected to anything. And that's kind of what I want to see now. So in a way, I got to give The Crooked Man props for giving us a movie that it was at least all-encompassing. And the story was just this. And even if you didn't know any other Hellboy thing, I think you could follow this story no problem.
Well, I had an incredibly difficult time following what the story was. I do have to say, with the caveat, that I don't know that my concentration is as high these days as it might have been in the past. So, and I think I'm suffering from like ADHD more so in my life now than ever before. So that might have something to do with, and I also start wandering and thinking about like my own stories when I'm watching
instead
TV.
Of like turning your brain off and just letting it like sort of flow over you. See, buddy, that's where the weed comes in, man. That's why you gotta smoke.
Like I did that the other day. I was watching something. I was like, did I miss this? I'm sitting there watching and I was like, oh, I literally like started thinking about how to fix some element in a story, and I think I was watching Reacher or something, which that just tells you it's like Reacher's not like high art, and I still completely missed something while I was looking at the screen. So just I was just saying that because like I did watch it, but it was hard for me to follow what the point was, I think.
Right, because they basically land in this town because of an accident on a train.
Yeah.
And so now the ultimate, I mean, when you think about it, the ultimate goal was just for them to find a payphone.
Yeah.
Like ultimately the goal of them is just to find a phone, but they kind of get sidetracked with this story about this guy who made like, you know, kind of sold his soul to the devil sort of thing. And they kind of have to help him fix that little problem, you know? Yeah.
It was weird for me watching this movie because I will say I was incredibly bored, but I was really impressed by the endeavor, you know? I don't think it worked. There were some things that I think worked really well, but then other times some things didn't work, and I could tell that it was like because of the budget, maybe, but at least they tried, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Overall, I think story wise, I kind of had this feeling of like, why is Hellboy even in this? Kind of like this almost would have worked as well or better if it was just random people like on a road trip that walk. But then it's like, I was impressed with Hellboy just kind of being there and not with the big to-do fanfare with like the makeup and all that.
Like
other
there's
stuff.
There's no like him landing in a superhero pose.
Yeah,
like there's none of that. I like the way the movie treats Hellboy.
Yeah.
Like just another dude who just happens to have a rock fist for a hand. And he, you know, obviously he's a bit more tougher than other people, but he's just kind of treated like another dude in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then I liked that, but then it really was like, I just was kind of watching how he was interacting with threats sometimes. And I was kind of I don't know. It's hard to say. It's like, it might've been the editing. So it's like in the opening sequence, when the agent gets attacked, he's just kind of hanging out in the back of the car. And then the other the girl gets attacked, and he still like doesn't jump in. And he seems pretty like hapless. I don't think that was intentional. It was sort of like they needed the story to have something happen, so they didn't really. And it was kind of bothering me, and I noticed that throughout the whole movie where that was kind of the case. But then I kind of like a lot of times I was like, well, like I could see why, because like when I think of Hellboy, I always think of like, I don't even know, like there's a like he's standing on like a rock, right? And it's like a not a silhouette, but he's standing on a rock, and there's like a big demon or something.
Yeah, Cthulhu kind of creature behind him. Yeah,
that's what I kind of think of. Or he's like jumping in the air and he's ready to hit something. So in this, I was just kind of like, nothing except for that spider was like any kind of like physical threat, but he just sort of like, I don't know, he kept taking punches and he was kind of stepping back and he wasn't. I was kind of like, that's why I was saying, it's like it could have just been like random guy, you know?
Yeah.
But then again, I kind of feel like, you know, that could partly be because of the budget, because you can't, you know, we can't do these big sequences or whatever. So it's like, yeah, he has to like, stand back.
But at the same time, like, I know we do have that image of Hellboy jumping in the air, you know, like to a, like into the maw of some creature that he's about to beat up. And I feel like that's become more synonymous with Hellboy these days. And I think it's because of Guillermo del Toro's portrayal of him. But I always took in like sort of in my head, the way he's portrayed in this movie is kind of how he is in the comic books. He is a bit more reluctant. He's a bit more like, ah, crap, I got to go deal with this now, you know, and it's not like he doesn't want to make a big deal out of things, you know, type of thing, and let alone make a big deal about him or anything like that. So I felt like his portrayal was a bit more akin to the comic books here. That's not to say that I disagree with you. I think sometimes he was like sort of relegated, you know, to the back. But I think that's, you know, you gotta, as a writer, I gotta imagine you're like, okay, I got like three or four characters here in the scene that I gotta write. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I want to spend all my time writing Hellboy because he's interesting and he's cool. But like, I gotta give everyone something to do, and he doesn't have like Abe Sapien in this one with him, so like all the people he has with him are essentially just normal humans. Like, he is the most powerful person there, so I wonder if you almost have to kind of depower him a little bit to kind of give other characters a chance to shine in the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think I was giving it a pass, was because of that, but at the same time it was bothering me. I do feel like there still is a way to do it without, like, he was incredibly passive, or just, and I really think it was just like an editing a lot of times, to be frank. Like, it was just like all this stuff was happening and he was like right there and he's like letting people get hurt and hit and thrown or whatever, heads bitten off, and then he like kind of jumps in, but then I'm like, what are you doing? Like, just shoot it or like punch it, you got the big, you know. It was kind of like that. Like, just for instance, to like, I consider myself a pacifist for the most part, but I will like, but if anything goes down, I'll jump in. Right.
Right.
So this morning I was like in the kitchen and I was putting, like silverware away, and out of the corner of my eye, it was like one of the slats on my windowsill kind of moved. Right. And I thought I saw someone like moving, and it was just like, I had like a knife or fork
and I turned full murder mode.
Like, I literally, yeah. Like within an instant, like I turned and I was ready to like, just, you know what I mean? Like, in an instant, I was ready, because, and then I realized what was happening, and then I looked at my hand, and I was like, dude, I didn't even hesitate. Like, I was ready to, like, if someone was in my place, I was ready to, like, go down with a fork in my hand, right? That's kind of what I'm saying. Like, and I'm just me, you know? So it's like, I just feel it's, they had a good opportunity to, because of the nature of the Crooked Man and the psychological nature, to be like, oh, I can't handle this one with my fists, you know, and then deal with, and then kind of deal with it that way. So that was the thing for me. But I think that's why it comes across as boring, because it didn't feel authentically, there didn't feel like an authentic pressure, you know, like, it didn't feel like, it's one thing when it's like, you know, you have a movie, like say Superman loses his powers and you're like, oh no, how's he going to get over this? But if Superman has his powers, that's how I kind of felt about Man of Steel a little bit. Like, he could just, like, nothing hurt him. So I was just like, why? Like, and I like Man of Steel, but it's like, give me, like, at least make him, you know, be able to be injured so that I feel like there's some kind of like threat to him. And I didn't really feel that.
Well, do you think it has something to do with the fact that, like, the Crooked Man being the villain, the antagonist of this, he doesn't care about Hellboy. He's after the other guy. So, like, literally, Hellboy and Bobby Joe or whatever her name is, they could have just left. Like, this has nothing to do with them. But, of course, they stay because they're part of the BPRD. But, like, it's interesting when you think about it, and this is what I do, this is why I do enjoy, like, talking things out with you about it, because I don't think about it at the time. But when you don't have the antagonist at all connected to the protagonist, and the fact that the protagonist can literally just walk away at any point in time, you're right, it does take away any sense of urgency to the threat that there is.
Yeah. I mean, and that was the thing, and it's interesting because, like, a little bit later, they started to, like, pull some stuff in, I think.
With his mom, Hellboy's mom. And that's when it became interesting. That's when, like, okay, that's the kind of stuff I want to, like, I started, like, popping for, you know?
But that was so late. It was sort of like, and that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's okay to not, you know, to not, you know, have a big monster and he's fighting. It's like, I'm not saying that, but it's sort of like the things that were within his realm, I feel like anybody with a broomstick would have, like, been more like, I'm going to try to take this thing down than he was. That's all I'm saying. Especially when he's got his big stone fist, you know.
Big stone fist and his awesome, his pistol.
And his gun. And his gun. Awesome, I'm like, dude, like, every time when he shot it, it was, like, cool. But then I was like, why aren't you doing it? And then, you know, there's a couple scenes where he, like, make a point of putting the bullets in. I forget the line he said, but I don't know. And then at the, like, I don't know, I don't want to spoil, but, like, he kind of, like, shoots in it. It's kind of like, yeah, like, we could have done this a long time ago.
Now, what did you think? They obviously went with a little bit more of a horror element, you know, with this. What did you think about that? Did that work for you? Did the vibe of you know, what they were trying to go for? Because this is not, like, an action movie. Guillermo del Toro's movies are, like, action fantasy with very, very light horror elements. This, you could tell that they, you know, it was pitched, like, look, we're going to actually do and try to do a horror movie, Hellboy. And I think they really did push the horror elements forward. It's not a horror movie. You know, I'd still say it's a comic book action movie first, but it has strong horror elements. Did they work for you?
I mean, so again, this movie's, like, up and down for me because I admire making it, like, a horror movie. And a large part of me is like, this is what they always should have done from day one anyway, right? I think that in some ways it was held back. I don't know. It's hard to say. It's like, in some ways, having Hellboy there holds it back from being as authentically scary horror as it could have been.
You can only take it so, you can only take the horror so far when your protagonist is Hellboy, nigh invulnerable.
Yeah. And then some of it was the literally, like, the production value or budget.
Yeah.
So it was like, but then it's because, like, you know, I'm thinking about a million things all the time when I'm watching. So like in the scenes, I'm like, I'm kind of judging, thinking, not judging like in a bad way, but thinking, like, if this had been random horror movie that I turned on Prime and there's no Hellboy on there and it's low budget and they're in that same scene.
Like, everything the same, everything exactly the same, just no Hellboy.
Yeah. Like, I remember there's a scene, like, they're walking through the forest and I was looking at, like, the blocking and the, and just, like, the framing. And I was just like, this is sort of like, it feels like, like a, like, fan film, but then it's Hellboy, so then I judge it a little, like, you know, it gets, you know what I mean? So, but I, but I think overall it's fine. That's why I'm saying, like, it was kind of like, it's kind of weird. But then there were a couple sequences that there was one where the crooked man, like, comes at the screen and it's, like, super jerky and, like, stop, and it actually literally brought up fear emotions in my body. So there was a couple more sequences like that. So then I really felt like if they had more money or time or resources, they could have actually brought that stuff. Because sometimes it just felt like, oh, we got the shot. We got to keep it moving. You know, I looked at the budget. I think they said it was $20 million.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, guys and gals, it is painfully low budget. I mean, I think it looks good for low budget, but all the problems that it has, I do believe, stem from its budget. You know, you don't see a lot of tracking shots and stuff like that, because like Diallo says, you got to get your shot and sort of get out. But when it works, I think it really works. And I want to reiterate what you said. It's like, you know, I'm like, I think they've always should have gone with this element, this horror element. And the comics have always had that, too. Mm-hmm. But just the Guillermo del Toro stuff was so bombastic and everything. Yeah. And I loved it for that. But I really wish we would have had a more horror-centric Hellboy before now, because this one, while I very much enjoy this one, it is held back immensely by its lack of budget.
Yeah. Yeah, and, There were a few other things that I feel like the budget probably contributed to certain things that, like, were kind of running in the back of my head, which is, I know it was set in 1959, I think it was. And it was just like, this could have just been today, you know, because...
There are parts of Appalachia that are probably still stuck back in 1959.
Or you just, like, no one's going to, like... Like, no one's really going to be, you know what I mean? Like, they could go, you could have said it today and been out in the middle of nowhere. Like, no one really would have really questioned that. But I
guess the cell phone thing is what they probably were trying to get rid of. That aspect of things. You know?
Yeah. There you go. You could have written some stuff out. But neither here nor there, but it was that they didn't go through any sort of links to visually show me. What was the agent? The woman.
Like Bobby Joe.
Bobby Joe. Yeah. So she it was like her inflection, the way she spoke was very much today. She even said some anachronistics. How do you say that word? Where she basically she said totally. Like a couple times, and I was like, yeah. So, I mean, it was stuff like that.
Well, when they go into the house, the Crooked Man's house at the end, there's like a room where there's like a bunch of stuff. And I saw like an RCA like record player that was clearly like from the 70s.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is supposed to be 1959. Like, it's just, they shouldn't have even said what year it was.
Yeah. And that actually, you reminded me, there was like this, I actually was going to look it up, but I didn't. But when they were looking, there was like a handful of pennies or something. And when I was a kid, I was really, really interested in this, how the backs of pennies had different designs. And I can't remember the years, but like it looked like a lot of them were more modern. And not from like the 50s. Yeah. But I didn't look because it could have easily been, you know, accurate. But I don't think it's also like a thing that I don't think they would have even thought to check.
And they probably didn't even care. Yeah, that's not in the budget to care.
But, you know, that's not even me. That's not me being like, you guys suck, because that's not it at all. But it was just like, I think at a certain point, I just started to like, because my brain was in this space of thinking about how, like, this didn't necessarily need to even be 1959, that I just noticed that, picked that up. But I mean, I think there was a piece of that there for me. And it was really Bobby Joe, really. She just seemed very, like, I don't know, Valley Girlish.
She didn't. I mean, very little in the movie screamed 1959 to me. And like I said, like, it totally took me out of the movie for a second when I saw that like stereo player. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, they did not have that in 1959, or like it wouldn't look like that. You know, it was clearly like 70s style. Like it was the stereo player that we all had growing up as kids, you know, in the 70s. Yeah. And I'm just like, I knew that shit wasn't from 1959. But like, you know, kind of going to the Crooked Man himself, what did you think of his design with like the broken neck and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, like I said, I thought that was great. I think it I mean, it was that again, like, I just, what I feel like is if you had a chance to do this all over again, and even with the same budget, you could have made different decisions and made it better. But like with him, his makeup, with Hellboy's makeup, I actually thought that those were like impressive. I don't know, like the Crooked Man, like, I don't know that I've seen very many movies lately with a character quite like that. I thought that was cool. But then conversely, you had the woman version, the blonde one, and I thought that that was kind of like,
that witch. Yeah. And I wanted to see more from her. Like, yeah. I didn't find her to be that interesting, and I kind of found, I always wanted the Crooked Man to be back on screen. Like, mm-hmm. he was the most interesting aspect as far as, like, sort of the threat goes. Like, yeah. the giant spider thing, I didn't really care for that because I didn't think it looked that interesting. I was like, it was just a big spider. That's all it was.
I mean, and that's one of the instances where, like, I don't normally judge a movie by special effects.
Oh, all the CGI in this movie was atrocious.
I let it slide with the spider, but there was a scene with, like, a raccoon.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't even the snake. The snake is, like, kind of was like, and that's why I hardly ever judge special effects, because I'm always like, it's all fake. So I don't necessarily care, right? Like, as I know it's fake, right? But I think it was the raccoon.
The one, there's a love interest that can shapeshift and she's kind of going to crawl back into her body. Yeah.
And it was so, like, it was so kind of rudimentary that it almost looked like it was like a Pixar cartoony version. And it just kind of, and I, you know, I don't, it's sort of like, I get it. So I wasn't like tossing the movie out because of that.
Yeah.
But it was just sort of like you like, when I can see it, you know that you kind of missed the mark. Basically.
Yeah, and I'm with you. Like, I can see the bad graphics and everything, but I'm like, I get it. It's low budget. I don't have a problem with it. I was actually kind of impressed by the snake CGI looked terrible, but I was kind of impressed by the length that they, like, the envelope that they pushed with that. So there's like one character that kind of gets suspended into the air. She's like, she has a dress on, but the snake comes out of pretty much out of her vagina and tangles around her, goes into her mouth, and creates this, like, never ending coil. And I was just like, you know, you look at it and you're like, okay, that's interesting. Then when you start thinking about what's happening, you're like, oh, that's, and that's when I liked what this movie was kind of going for. Like, I kind of wish, and I'm not, I don't need it to have nudity in it. I don't need it to be, like, sexually explicit. But that's some hardcore shit that they're throwing out right there. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm like, and that's kind of like as sort of as far as they go with it. And I wanted them to kind of stay in that area. I wanted them to make things to be a bit uncomfortable, because at the end of the day, the thing that does make Hellboy interesting, it is a superhero comic, but it's a horror comic. He fights horrors. Like, he's a monster that fights monsters, and I want to see monsters doing monstrous things, you know?
Yeah, that's like with that snake scene, that's like that was the same way. Like I said, I didn't like, it was obviously fake, but what they were doing with it was interesting.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it was
you're like okay,
yeah, because it wasn't just like, if it now if it had just been like a snake slithering on the ground, I would have been like,
yeah,
you know, but like, because of what they were doing, I was like, oh, that's interesting. And you, like, again, it's like, you get it. So, but I mean, you know, I remember watching what's that movie, Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I'm still like, to this day, I'm like, why didn't they just get wolves in the end of the movie? Like, just get, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's always
CGI
bothered me.
Wolves.
Yeah, you've got like $100 million. Just get like some wolves, you know?
Train some fucking wolves.
So, I mean, that's kind of like, I think when it comes to like animals, it kind of bugs me. But anyways, actual animals. But anyways, it's kind of a small quibble, but again, I notice it. And again, this movie, it's like I have this weird feeling because like we're talking about it and like I'm like, I didn't like it, but then there's parts that I actually liked. Like I actually liked a small character moment at the very, 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 very end of the movie when she kind of like leans on him. And I liked the idea of their partnership, friendship, companionship. But I also feel like they didn't really like mine it. They didn't really examine it. They didn't really explore it. And I think that that's a lot of reasons why the movie ended up feeling flat, as flatter than it could have been. If they had explored a little bit of like, you know, given her a little bit more like, this is my first mission, I don't want to fail, like stuff like that, you know? But then, you know, it's like with the spider, I thought it was kind of cute. Kind of like it gets away. And then, you know, they go through the episode and then it kind of pops up again. I was like, oh, okay. You know,
Of course it was there. I forgot about that.
but at the same time, I didn't think that they executed it well either. You know what I mean? So I really like, it's such a weird thing for me, this movie. I shouldn't say I didn't like it. I wasn't necessarily entertained, but like I said, I did admire a lot about it, and I by no stretch don't hate it. But it's like, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it either.
Yeah, I mean, context always matters. I was absolutely laid up with a thrown out back, and I had already watched, like, I was just watching shitty movies because I didn't want to half pay attention. And so I'd already watched Geostorm with Gerard Butler, and I was
great,
just like,
I
was, yeah, it was stupid, but I was like,
it's
whatever.
Crazy.
Yeah,
it's insane.
It's one of those movies. It's like, it's same guy who did Day After Tomorrow. It's just like all those other fucking movies. And then I watched like Elevation with Anthony Mackie. Uh-huh. And that was okay. I was like, whatever. And I was like, oh yeah, Crooked Man. I was like, yeah, hey, I fucking hated the Neil Marshall movie, but I still love Hellboy, so let me put this on.
Yeah.
And then I was like, it was better than the other two movies that I literally just watched, uh-huh. and it took my mind off of not being able to fucking move my back at all. So like right there. And it already elevated it. And again, like I said, it's a stupid, stupid small thing that got into my crawl about the Hellboy, the Guillermo del Toro Hellboys, and the fact that like he can't be seen in public. I hated that subplot. I fucking hated it because I loved it in the comics that no one gave a shit that Hellboy was this like 6 foot tall red demon with a tail. No one gave a shit. And I really liked that they honed in on that aspect in the Crooked Man. So like, but all the same, all the things that you said, I do agree with. It's just how little or how much they affected me might be a little bit different than what they affected you. Mm-hmm. But I noticed everything that you brought up. Like I'm on the same page with you as everything that you brought up. I think it could have used a bit more. Could have used a double the budget. I think they could have gotten more out of it. I think they should have leaned more into the horror aspect of things. I would have liked for them to have fleshed out Hellboy and Bobby Joe's, you know, relationship. If this is their first time working together, kind of solidify that a little bit stronger, you know, like, is this their first time? Great. Then have conversations about them getting to know each other. But it was weird because it almost felt like they didn't know each other that well, but it also felt like it wasn't her first time in the field, you know, and I just, I wish they'd committed to sort of one element.
Yeah, and you know, it's like, so after it was over, I was really curious about, like, I was like, what was this? And I was looking at the credits, and I saw Mike Mignola was a writer, co-writer was...
Yeah, and I think it's based on, like, I think he did a comic called The Crooked Man. Yeah.
Yeah, and I saw a whole Reddit thread of people talking about that, and one person's like, you don't know Hellboy if you didn't know that, and I was just like, you know, there's that whole thing going on.
There's always gatekeepers on Reddit.
Yeah. But, and I think... one of the Mike Richardson, who's a Dark Horse, he was like, wasn't he the president or something in Dark Horse? I forget.
I saw their names. Yeah.
Mike Mignola was the, and so I was getting the impression that, like, we're talking about, I wish it had more budget, but I was getting the impression that it was just like a wonder that this was even made.
I do believe that. I do believe that, like, we're just lucky that this exists.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially after how bad Neil Marshall's one went.
Yeah.
You know, the Hellboy reboot.
Yeah. And so in that, I was actually, again, I mean, I was impressed. Like, again, I was impressed with it even as I was watching it without even knowing, like, what the deal was, just because, but it was sort of like me visually, I could see like what was going on, and I was like, dude, like, I could see you working with not a lot, and they actually think that they did really well in some spots, but it did ultimately come across as like a fan film, and sometimes it did. But yeah, I think it was from one of his graphic novels, and it just felt like I can't remember if it's that, I don't know if it's that company that does like crowd fundraising for movies. I think I saw that, and like, I don't know, cut this if that's not right. That,
I don't know.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if this was a crowdfunded movie.
Yeah, there's that company. I can't, like, Monster or something. I can't remember what it is. But anyways, I felt I could have sworn I saw like their logo or something. And but yeah, I don't know. But then, you know,
was it Fuzz on the Lens? Fuzz on the Lens, maybe?
No.
Anyways, it's okay.
But one thing I really liked about it was, like, again, I liked. There was a lot of thought put into it. I just don't think it was executed. But, like, when it opens, it's like, you know, a Hellboy production, whatever. And it kind of looked kind of grindhousey. And yeah. The same thing when it went out, it closed like that. But then
the title card at the beginning and the end. Yeah, it had this old 1960s, 70s style to it. And I loved that.
Yeah, I loved it. And because it made me feel like I was watching the zombie movie, whatever.
Yeah.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You know, I kind of felt like I was kind of starting to watch that. So I really enjoyed, like, the intention of a lot of it. It just, you know, but then it just kind of felt flat sometimes. And then in the middle, like a broad part of the middle section, I just kind of really felt like it was, like, ultimately flat. But. I'm glad they made it, and it's one of those things, like, I admire it, like, you know, it's like, hey, let's make a movie, and they got together and they got the money and then they did their thing and it exists, and that's more than, you know, I admire that more than like a big Hollywood production per se, you know.
I feel the exact same way. It's like, I didn't hate my time with it. I don't know if I could sit here and say everyone should go out and see it. Mm-hmm. But I'm happy it exists. And I do feel like it sort of righted the wrongs of the Neil Marshall movie. I think we can both agree it's better than the Neil Marshall one. We can both agree it's not as good as The Golden Army. Mm-hmm. So the question is, do you like this one better or worse than the first Hellboy Guillermo del Toro
movie? Yeah, I mean, that was actually thinking about that. Because I'm not a Guillermo del Toro fan.
Okay. Do you like Pacific Rim?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I'm more of like, I like what I like. Like, you know what I mean? Right. I've always been.
You're not
that
going
way.
Out to like. You're not going to the movie because it's a Guillermo del Toro movie, but you are going to the movie because it's giant robots fighting giant kaijus.
Yeah, and so it's funny because I was like, well, okay, like. I just think, like, this is overall better because, like, I think one of my biggest problems with the first Hellboy movie was they get rid of Abe Sapien, like, in that last act, I think.
Right, yeah, because he gets taken out, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like there was some weird writing stuff that happened, and it just, I don't know, movie went off the rails. But Guillermo del Toro, like, you could see his... Like, he definitely is one of the most talented filmmakers, you know? So it's like, I actually was kind of stumped. I feel like that movie is better than this one, even though, it's for me, it's like comparing two things I don't like. You know what I mean? It's like, because I think the fumble of this movie is that it comes off as mostly boring or not engaging. The fumble with the other movies, I think it just completely misinterpreted
the source material.
Yeah. With it, like the way I remember, like, he just, like, the quippiness that they had in the first movie, I didn't feel was like authentic or earned.
Plus they had that shitty FBI character that they had to add. You know,
audience.
This is the audience's point of view, and he never existed in the fucking comics.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah.
I hated that character. I hate when they do that in movies.
Like, you just reminded me of like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
They had to add the one guy, Tom Sawyer. I hated that shit.
Yeah. I don't really like either. But then it's like, yeah, I just like, I like the Guillermo del Toro movies that I like, I really like.
Okay.
But for the most part, when I go in to go see one of his movies, I'm not like, oh, Guillermo, do me, man. You know, I'm kind of actually annoyed by some things. Like, it's like, oh, you're gonna have a hand that's gonna have eyes on it. Okay, like he does that, and like, you know,
it's your thing.
I was like, I'm not impressed.
The Guillermo del Toro thing.
Yeah, you know? It's like, I'm not impressed. That doesn't do anything to me. But like, he does it all the time, and everyone's like, ooh, ah. So, but it's like, I think he did The Orphanage. Like, so I think it was,
I think he produced it, but yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and then there was some other movie I saw that he did. It was a Spanish
Pan's Labyrinth. Spanish and movie. Stuff. See, hand.
And like I say, I didn't like Pan's Labyrinth. Everyone loved it, and I just like I couldn't stand it. But then, you know, Hellboy, whatever. But then Hellboy 2,
awesome.
I'm in love with, right?
Yeah.
Pacific Rim, you know, and it says something when I go into one of his movies and I'm like, oh, here we go, Guillermo del Toro, Pacific Rim. I'm like, dude, he nailed it, you know?
Yeah.
But then I didn't Shape of Water. I didn't really like it because it just was like Abe Sapien. I don't know. Anyways, didn't make sense to me. But anyways, this movie in a lot of ways, I think is, a better creative effort. I just, you know, if it had the same budget as even the first movie with a little more time, because like I think that's what happens, like when you have a smaller budget sometimes you're shooting like, oh, we got this location and so yeah, we've got
we're
a week
gonna use it,
yeah as opposed to like being able to set up for months, and so you can get better shots and stuff. And I think that really came across in this movie, where sometimes I'm like, oh, they could have set things up better, but sometimes you just got to keep it moving. And so if you had that first movie's budget with this story, I feel like it actually could have been like, I don't think that this will be like a cult movie, but if you had more money behind it, I think it could be a cult movie.
I think that's pretty accurate. I'd say, like, for me it kind of boils down to, I think that The Crooked Man is a more more accurate representation of Hellboy from the comic books, mm-hmm. but Guillermo del Toro's Hellboy 1 is a more fun movie, mm-hmm. Overall. I still think, you know, my favorite is still Golden Army, mm-hmm. and then, I don't know, this one and number one might be tied, you know. Oh, you know what? No, not really, because I'll probably never really watch this, maybe once again in my life, maybe. Mm-hmm. I pop in Hellboy 1 and Golden Army randomly because whether, you know, Guillermo del Toro or not, he's always beautiful to watch. And sometimes it's a great... And side note real quick, grab any of his movies in 4K, they look unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he oversees all of the transfers and everything. Okay. So I have Pacific Rim on 4K. It is unfucking real. And I plan on getting, you know, Hellboy and Golden Army on 4K as mm-hmm. well. But yeah, that's the thing. Like, I think this is a better Hellboy adaptation of the comic book, mm-hmm. but I still will probably watch Hellboy 1, the Guillermo del Toro movie, more than I'll ever watch this.
Yeah. Yeah, and it just, there's just one other piece that I remember that just makes me, it's like, it kind of goes to the whole, like, I'm scratching my head, is when they finally get to a phone, there's like this really creepy, screechy music, and I feel like something's going to happen, and then it just cuts to them sitting in a helicopter, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, and I remember that.
Yeah, and it's sort of that's what I'm talking about. Like, I don't understand some choices that were made.
What's the language of this film trying to tell me right here in this scene? It's supposed to tell, it's telling me to be scared. And I know what you're talking about. It's like, it's yang, you know, and then all of a sudden, yup, we're done. We're on the helicopter.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, so I mean, I think that's kind of it.
I think we've taken it about as far as it can go, guys and gals. I mean, you know, we don't do like thumbs up or thumbs down or anything. Just take what we said and you know, make your own decision. If you think it's worth your time, it is a smooth hour and a half movie, so it's not really that much of a commitment. I say go for it if you're a fan. Especially if you hated the last reboot Hellboy, I think this one might be a little bit better. So, but if you're a big fan of the Guillermo del Toro ones, this one might not be your style.
Yep.
Well, Daniela, thank you so much for doing this with me. I was just going to do it by myself, but I was like, oh man, let's, and I think this is a much better conversation than if it was just me.
I mean, you know,
I very much enjoy talking to you about it.
You know, I like to talk about movies, I see, so that's, yeah, you this do. Is fun.
And Diallo, I know you haven't done a new episode lately, but you do have a backlog of episodes. So where can people listen to other movie reviews that you've done in the past?
So I have another review that you didn't ask for. You can find it on all podcast catchers. I also have a website where it has all the episodes, another review that you didn't ask for. I think the last movie I've done was... The last movie I did is the one with Francis Ford Coppola. He directed.
Oh, yeah. Metropolis, yeah, or whatever the hell it's called. Megalopolis. Or something.
Yeah, that was. Yeah. So that's the last one I did, which is that was like in October. I think I saw that.
And wasn't that the one that Francis Ford Coppola kept trying to take down too?
What do you mean?
Didn't that review keep disappearing or something every time you put it up on Facebook? And you're like, there's some conspiracy happening.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Because Diallo also post the review to Facebook. And for some reason, that review kept getting disappeared for some reason.
Yeah, it was so
weird. And we think
that
Francis Ford Coppola was making sure everyone who had bad reviews take them down, you know?
Oh, man. Yeah, I kept posting and it was there and then it would just disappear.
It got disappeared.
Yeah. So, yeah, I write them and then I read them. So now that I started the website, so there's a text version on the page for the review. But yeah, anyways, I do have a backlog. Who knows if I'll get, you've already done, Nosferatu? Did you do Nosferatu?
Yeah, I did.
So you already covered that. So I don't need to do that. I don't need to put mine up. I had some good thoughts about it, but,
yeah, I did one of Romulus, Alien Romulus.
Yeah, I saw that one. Yeah. So, yeah, it's mostly there's some TV that I want to do. I'm just not able to jump in. And I'm really wanting to do this series. I started it where it's my top 10 plus 6 or 7 all-time favorites because I think it's because I'm a Libra. I can't remove stuff from my list, so I just I find new movies I just add on. I want to do those. That's hopefully I'll be able to do one soon. I just finished Reacher season 3.
Nice.
Watch Paradise. So I have stuff to say. Just I have to sit down and say it.
Commit it to paper. Yeah. Myra and I are currently watching Daredevil Born Again. Is that one on your radar at all?
No pun intended. Because radar. yeah.
Good guy. It took me a second to even Diallo was staring at me. He's like, I don't think he gets it.
I mean, it's more sonar, right?
But, yeah, there you go.
but I didn't really like it. I watched the first episode. I might have watched the second one. I think I just watched the first episode. I can't remember.
Okay.
It was more for me. Here's my brain was just like, I don't care how this turns out after the first episode, I think. If I watched the second episode, I can't remember. I think I watched the second episode. Anyways, I don't care how this turns out. And I could have kept watching it. But I just was like, I don't care. And so I just stopped. And it probably has something to do, partly to do with just how over Marvel I'm kind of am right now.
Yeah.
So I made the unintentional choice to not see Thunderbolts just a few days ago because I saw an ad for it. And I thought it said that it was now playing. And I was like, oh, it's already out? I should go see it. And I was like, I don't want to see it. And then I realized... I was like, I'm not going to bother. And then I realized it's not coming out for a little
for like
bit
a
more.
Month.
Yeah. But then I was just like, oh, I guess I've already made
my decision.
I already made my choice. I was like, I just don't care anymore. It's kind of like you said, I'm going to see Fantastic Four because, other than that, I'm just kind of over all of it now, unfortunately.
Yeah. For me with MCU, Myra and I watched Loki season 2, and it really kind of pulled me back in because, I mean, we sat on that for a year or more, and I was like, oh, I actually really liked it, but I think I'm just going to cherry pick. I'm more interested in Thunderbolts than I am in Avengers Doomsday, and it's so wild to me that, I don't give a rat's fuck about Avengers Doomsday, and I can still remember when the first Avengers movie came out, and it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen, and I was like, I never want to get tired tired of this, mm-hmm. and now I'm tired of it.
Yeah, I'm just exhausted. I think, you know, this is not a Marvel podcast, but I think as a comic book reader, you will probably appreciate this, because I kind of equate how I interact with comic books, how I feel like they should have proceeded with the Marvel movies after Endgame, which is like they had a formula that worked, which was making everything kind of interconnected, even if it's like the barest thread. But like growing up, like I didn't collect every single Marvel comic book that came out. I got the stuff that I wanted. And I didn't have to worry about if I'm missing something over in whatever book, I won't understand what's happening in the books that I'm reading. And that's part of why I'm not as into the movies as much anymore. It's like, I feel more compelled to see Thunderbolts, 'cause I'm like, will I miss an introduction of some character that's going to be in a movie 5 years from now, rather than I want to see this movie. That's kind of where I'm at with it. So that's kind of, you know, I saw Captain America also.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Disney Plus for that.
Yeah, and you definitely can. I actually thought it was okay, but like, but you don't need to go to the theater for it. So
it didn't look theater worthy. Now, Fantastic Four, on the other hand, I think looks great. I'm excited for that, but I do hope it's more standalone and just it is its own thing.
And I don't have any faith that any of those things are going to be that. Yeah. So
I know.
Yeah. But, you know, I hope, you know, I hope everything is good. Like, I never want anything to be bad.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, like, I go see, like, as we were talking Guillermo del Toro, it's like, I'm not, like, I personally feel in a way, don't, anyone listening to this, don't misconstrue this. In a way, I feel like he's a little bit overrated. Don't misconstrue, because I do think he's incredibly talented. But I don't think he always hits that mark, which is fine, right? But it's sort of like, I will go into a movie and I might not be impressed with the person, but then I can still have my socks rocked by Hellboy 2, which I didn't like the first movie, but I love the second one. That's, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, mm-hmm. I want everything to be good. I want UA Bowl to come out with like the best movie ever. Right. You know what I mean? Like because for me, I want to be entertained. So why would I want things to suck? But
And as far as entertaining goes, at least Crooked Man, you didn't turn it off 15 minutes into it. So.
Yeah, I didn't. Well, no, I might have if I.
You were like, I might have.
I had to review it for this.
If it wasn't for work,
I did struggle getting through this. But again, I have to reiterate though, I did struggle with it, but I also was really impressed. I can't. It's just a weird. It's weird to say express, but if I had turned it on my own and just was watching it, I probably would have just turned it off. But in a way, I'm glad to have seen it, because I will watch anything. Let's do this romantic comedy. Okay. You know, let's do this musical. Okay. You're like,
let's do GoBots in the Battle of the Rock Boys. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. I mean, that hurt me.
If I have to.
That hurt my soul.
All of our soul. I just finished editing that. We were not kind to that at all.
I think when we're not kind to something, then I think that like it must have really failed.
I think so too, because we do try to be. We try not to do the snarky thing, it was still a fun episode, and so was this, man. And I know this is going to be labeled as a mini review, and it's already an hour.
It's already
and
10 an hour. Minutes.
but it was fun, and I hope everyone enjoyed the discussion. And if you get a chance, check out. If you have checked out the movie, leave a comment on Spotify, on social media, on Patreon, wherever. Leave a comment. Let us know what you thought of the movie. Let us know if we were on the mark, off the mark. Just let us know in general what you thought of it. And as always, Diallo, thanks, man, for coming on the show and always having great discussions, dude.
Yeah, man.
I always have a blast with you, buddy. And at least we got to record a little bit earlier today, too. Since,
right. Yeah. I mean, I misses this movie was, I wish there were more movies like this.
I wish there are more
opportunities for people to make movies like this, and some of them are going to end up working, and I'd rather than the feeling like I have to like be wowed by big special effects and stuff. So
Yeah. No, I'm with you, buddy. I think that this could, you know, there's a market for this, mm-hmm. especially like superhero characters. They don't have to always be a $1 billion movie industry. You can make a movie that, like this, that has interesting aspects to it.
Yeah.
But again, I'm with you. It wasn't perfect. I did want more from it, but like you, I'm happy it existed. Didn't hate my time with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even if I only ever watch it once in my life again, I will probably always look back on it fondly mm-hmm. and favorably. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, that's all I got.
Cool.
How about this? As always...
Catch you on the review side. What am I supposed to
on
say?
On the extra long mini review side.
Be sure to subscribe to Podcasting After Dark and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Support Podcasting After Dark on Patreon. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Podcasting After Dark. And visit us next time for another installment of Podcasting After Dark with Corey Stevenson and Zach Schaefer.